In the coffee hour, I'm Andy Bates. It is Friday, August 31st. Sarah's out today, probably doing bicycles and fun stuff, but enjoying the nice weather today in St. Louis as well. It is it's a nice, pretty day here in St. Louis. We have some great topics lined up today. You've probably heard of Financial Peace University or Dave Ramsey before. Many people have used it, found great success with it in terms of managing and being stewards of their financial resources and other resources that are entrusted to them as well. We're going to take a look at it, dig into what does it mean to be a Lutheran and look at this Financial Peace University and Dave Ramsey's approach to being stewards of that which is entrusted to us. Also, what's going on in the skies? I've seen a number of posts and news articles about being able to see planets in the night skies recently. During the second half, we'll check in with Dr. Robert Herman, professor of physics at Concordia University, Nebraska, and what's going on at the Austin Observatory there at Concordia University, Nebraska, and what we can see in the night skies. Stick around for that coming up in the second segment. Joining us by phone this morning, Pastor Jonathan Connor. He's pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and also a contributor to the Lutheran Witness August issue, Lutheran View of Dave Ramsey. Pastor Connor, thanks so much for joining us on the Coffee Hour today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us how you were first introduced to Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University.
You know, I came across FPU probably a good 10 years ago or more, and I can't remember my first encounter. We did offer it at my first parish, but I don't know. If you've heard Dave Ramsey, he's kind of everywhere on the radio, so probably that's where I heard him.
Yeah, he has a number of... Well, he has his radio show and then just a number of resources. You can find him just about anywhere. If you exactly. Google the name, you're going to find all kinds of things available from Dave Ramsey. So what was that first, did you take the FPU class, the Financial Peace University class?
Yeah. So years ago, we offered it at my first parish, and then we offered it again last fall here at this parish. And I just saw it to be an incredibly insightful and practical way to manage finances. And I know that many people who took it at my first parish and then this parish have just spoken to me over and over again about how beneficial it was for them personally, not only in personal finances, but even in their relationship, because for a lot of people, it was the first time they were feeling like a team, that they had a shared goal in their finances. And when financial stresses start to go away, a lot of stresses in marriage start to go away. So I just saw a lot of good things come out of it.
How did it, did you find it helpful for you?
Yes. I'll tell you, the second time around was probably more helpful because mm-hmm. the first time we took a lot of what he taught and we worked at it. But the second time we really actually made a budget where we know where every single dollar for the month is going to go in advance. And that was really helpful. So actually, today is the last day of the month. And that means in the Connor household, tonight is budget meeting. we'll be doing the budget meeting for September. And what's really helpful for us is that we know for example, I know that if my computer breaks, I have money in the computer fund because we've been budgeting. We went on vacation in August out to the Rockies, and as Dave Ramsey likes to put it, if you can take the vacation, it doesn't follow you home. In other words, the debt doesn't come with you because we budgeted for a year. So I know that the dollars we're spending, they're all allocated. So there's no fear of, oh my goodness, if I spend this, is this going to wreck our finances? No, I know it's already in the budget, so we're good. And it's just alleviated all kinds of fears and stresses that before just kind of lurked under the surface.
So what does budget night, family budget meeting look like? Do you have certain rituals that go with family budget night?
Sure. Yeah, great question. So usually my wife has got a lot of stuff prepared in advance, but we just sit down and we have our stock categories that we're going to go through. And we're going to say, okay, is that going to stay at the same dollar amount we budgeted last month? We want to tweak it a little bit. We'll talk about, okay, how many Sundays are there in this coming month? That affects we take our tithe and we divide it by how many Sundays they are to figure out what our weekly giving is going to be. Are there any special giving opportunities that are coming up that we're going to plan for in our giving? This month in the Connor household, our oldest is in cross country, so we know that we're going to be driving all over Western Iowa going to all these different cross country meets. So that affects gas budget, so we're going to plan ahead for that. So it's just a way to look ahead at our month and plan financially how we're going to make it work. And it's a great time to talk about what's not only happening financially, but what's happening in our life. It's just a time that forces us to sit down together and plan ahead for our month, which I find to be not only beneficial for the finances, but for the marriage.
So we're speaking about it from the the affirming perspective. Let's back up a little bit. What is at the heart of our financial problems, particularly as I think North Americans, we have some significant financial problems. We see debt is nearly epidemic in the U.S. Among households. What is at the heart of our financial problems?
Yeah, so great question. And I think there are two ways I can answer. I need to offer one first, just because we need to acknowledge this is a possibility, but it's not the one I want to spend the most time on. Look, the reality is, for some, God may choose to inflict hardship on them, as in a Job or a Paul. Okay, so we have to at least acknowledge not everybody's financial hardship is because of the second reason. But the second reason, I think, which would be the one like you mentioned in North America, that probably is more likely what's going on. Honestly, it's a heart issue. And it's deep down a failure to find contentment in God and what he gives us and who he is. And we have this deep-seated feeling of, somehow if I, this next new thing, that I'll be content. We don't always put it like that, but we want and we crave, and so we go and get it. And it's not finding contentment ultimately in who God is for us, what he provides for us, our daily bread. We always covet our neighbor's daily bread. And so it's that real struggle to find contentment in God. So it's a ninth and tenth commandment issue maybe, but really primarily it's a first commandment issue, resting in the giver of gifts, the true God, and being content in what he's given us, and then choosing intentionally to live joyfully and thankfully within those means. That's where the budget will come in. But I think that's the hard issue right there.
So it's a first commandment issue, ninth and tenth commandments. Well, all the commandments, really. But
sure.
Why are we reluctant to admit, to confess that? Why are we reluctant to acknowledge that that it's a lack of trust in God issue?
That's such a great question, because that's really hard to admit. I mean, when you get down to it, we like to offer all kinds of surface explanations, because ultimately we're trying to excuse ourselves, to remove culpability, and not to make it sound so severe. But when you get down to it, once you take away all those excuses and you're just brutally honest, that's what it is. And look, it's a little bit like feeling like you're getting cornered. And when people feel backed into a corner, they have a couple options. They can either at that point admit their guilt and then confess it and receive forgiveness, which would be the better option. But oftentimes we try to fight back and find some way out, some excuse, some justification, some way to say, well, I'm the exception. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I visit with people who always think that their situation is the exception, that they are always the exception. I think that's just human nature, fallen human nature, is to look for some way out, some way to say, it's not my fault.
I'm special.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the exception.
What is at the heart of Dave Ramsey's strategies for addressing our financial problems?
So what's so brilliant about what he does, and it's nothing, not rocket science, but it's just a simple plan. He calls it seven baby steps. You can call it whatever you want to, but he just lays out seven steps and he prioritizes them. You don't do step number two until you've done step number one. And so you go through the steps and it works. So just, in very brief, his steps are this. Step one, save $1,000 for emergencies. Step two, use what he calls the debt snowball to pay off debt. Three, Save 3 to 6 months' expenses for emergencies. 4, invest 15% of income into tax-favored retirement plans. 5, save for children's college. 6, pay off your home early. 7, build wealth and give. Now, typically, number 7, Lutherans get a little squeamish because we don't like the term build wealth. And I would offer just a slight tweak to that, but because we're not seeking to build wealth to build wealth. But we are seeking to build freedom from debt so that we can give generously. But the 7 steps are brilliant, and they work.
Any other potential pitfalls that concern you?
Yeah, theologically, he has a tendency to do what I call proverbialize scripture. So, you know, I take the Proverbs. Those are great wisdom literature. They're really great to lean on. The borrower is slave to the lender. He loves to quote that, and he's right to do that. But when he goes elsewhere in scripture, sometimes he has a tendency to proverbialize statements of Jesus in the Gospels, for instance, and turn them into wise sayings about money, which when you actually look at them in context, which is how we're to read scripture, they're not really about money. I mean, you have to really squint your eyes and say, well, you could make application that way, maybe, but he has a tendency to proverbialize scripture, and the theological concern I have is when you proverbialize scripture, what you end up doing is creating a wise saying, and you end up evicting Christ from the text. And that would be one theological downfall I see.
So working through Financial Peace University with a Lutheran worldview can be done without dangerous consequences, I suppose.
Yeah, you just have to know going in that you got a few theological concerns, and that's why I wrote for our synod they're calling a preview and review of FPU, and that's on the synod's webpage. But yeah, if you just go through that document and see up front and say, okay, there are a few theological concerns that we need to be aware of and be afraid of it, but we know up front, and then resituate FPU in the place it belongs, which is in Christian vocation. I think you situate it there and you make sure people know to read scripture in context, that the point of scripture is Christ, not making a budget, although making a budget is important. But you just kind of resituate it where it belongs theologically and put it within Christian vocation. I think then you have an excellent program, be very beneficial, and can be used by Lutherans very successfully.
What can happen when families in a congregation successfully learn from Financial Peace University and practice what they're learning? How can that affect a congregation?
Oh, it's fantastic what it does for a congregation. I want you to imagine being the pastor of a congregation, and you continually find that you've outgiven your budget, and now you have this question of, well, we have some extra money here. What should we do with it? Well, that's a great problem to have. It's not the usual problems churches have, but imagine people who actually feel free financially, and they can give without fear of not being able to pay their bills. What does that do for families? What does that do for their children? What's that do for this mentality of a church and the way people can give freely and joyfully? And then for a church to say, wow, we're able to do far more than what we thought we were going to be able to do. These sorts of things, I like to dream and say, what if your people were out of debt and they all started, even half of them started to tithe? Do you know that you could call your own missionary just for your own town to work full time? You'd have the funds to do it. You could do mercy ministry. You could do compassion work. You could do, the sky's the limit. If people are out of debt and they're giving freely and joyfully and that they're excited about this, that not only transforms congregations, it can transform communities. And I think that has great potential.
Pastor Jonathan Connor, pastor at Zion Lutheran Church, Manning, Iowa, and author of A Lutheran View of Dave Ramsey and the August 2018 issue of The Lutheran Witness. Pastor Connor, thanks so much for being our guest and sharing with us about Financial Peace University.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Coming up in just a little bit, what will we see in the night skies? I'm going to talk with Dr. Robert Herman at Concordia University, Nebraska. Also, thanks to our friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the Coffee Hour. You can find them at cuw.edu.